You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room. I'm not lonely. Mm-hmm. I've got Matt Doyle here to keep me company, and that's great. I'm super appreciative, but there's no Ben Bear on this Monday. There's no David Goss on this Monday. The GA Cup in Frisco hath taken them away from us, but we will do our best in their stead.
Are you having a little bit of FOMO?
No.
Really?
No, not FOMO. As much as I love Frisco, I'm perfectly fine hanging out here in New York City, doing my thing. Cameron's not sleeping, so I have fear of missing sleep, so FOMS, if that's an actual thing.
I don't think so.
They can do their thing.
Even after seeing NYCFC beat Real Madrid.
Their goalkeeper stood on his head, by the way.
He
the highlights
nice
are like, check out that goal. I'm like, this goalkeeper just made like five world-class saves.
Yeah.
Well done, son.
Yeah, and Gio Reyna doing his stuff.
Yeah,
as
flipping
well.
Balls over the top. Yeah. We'll see if NYCFC can sign him. We can all hope and pray. Hashtag play your kids. Of course, they're at GA Cup in Frisco. You can follow that coverage on MLSsoccer.com. All the games are streaming. Ben Bear is providing coverage. Bobby Warshaw is doing his thing as well, along with David Goss. So tune into all of that. In the meantime, we got a big show coming for you. Zlatan. We're going to keep talking about him because that's what we do. It was not official. Last week, we talked to Paul Tenorio. He kind of walked you through the salary cap, budget implications for the LA Galaxy. We've got Doyle here, so we're going to go through the tactical side. Somebody's got to sit. When you bring Zlatan in, somebody's got to go to the bench. Could it be Gio Dos Santos? We'll figure that out in just a second. There's a new LAFC DP, according to reports as well, Andre Horta. We've got a little insider information to share with you. BWP, the most goals in a five-year span. He is brilliant. Jesse Marsh has some opinions that are very – a little bit controversial. We'll
a little
that.
Bit. Less controversial than they used to be.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Liam Ridgewell did not even travel to Portland. He watched the game while tweeting on his phone. By the way, he's the captain of the Timbers. We'll go to the rest of them last week four. Sam Stachel is going to join us. He spoke with Chris Klein on Zlatan. Plus, he has details on Yaromov Sissian's buyout with RSL. Just signed with a new team. Then Dave, because you know what? It wouldn't be Extra Time Radio without Dave Goss. Checked in from Frisco with Aleko Askandarian, player relations and competition executive here at MLS. They're going to talk youth development and U.S. national team against Paraguay since Doyle just isn't having it these days in Seg 2. And Seg 3, the mailbag. You, the listener, you're bringing the heat. It's been so great to read your messages. I laugh every single time I go into the email, every single time I go to the Hot Take Hotline. It really is a pleasure. Overarching port from week four, Doyle, the East is so, so, so much better than the West.
Yeah, I think so.
It's at this point, last year we spent the whole season arguing about it and kind of like making the transition.
Yeah.
The transition has been made.
Yeah, I think so.
It's just done and dusted at this point.
From what we've seen in the first month of the season, the only Western Conference team that's, I think, really put together and purposeful so far is LAFC. And I could sort of throw Houston into that group, except Houston's taking a couple of bad results just because of their lack of speed on the back line. But everything, if you look at a Western Conference team, there's a really good chance it could be like, that's really a work in progress.
There's a but for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
A big but, too.
With one T.
Yes.
With one T.
Correct.
Andrew likes big butts. I can't
Yeah,
lie.
Well, you know what? As Bobby Warshaw says, it's got to be ripe if you want to get through preseason in the course of 10 months.
Yes. And it is ripe for most Eastern Conference teams. They've come out of the gates just really understand. I'm not saying most. Five of them at the very least, maybe a few more, really understand what they're about. And they're going out there and they're executing it at a high level week after week after week. Go ahead.
You said purpose. And that's when I look at these two conferences, and I've been thinking this for about 6 months. It's the projects. It's the longevity of the projects. It's the executives involved, which is not to say there aren't great executives and head coaches and fill in the blanks on the Western side, but they're just not as mature. You know, RSL, I think they've got a great future. They're not as mature. LA Galaxy, they've been back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. This project, not as mature. Even LAFC, I feel like we're headed down a road here where there's going to be that butt that pops up despite this new signing. I mean, FC Dallas, they're full of butts right now. Vancouver Whitecaps, come on. You got to beat a shorthanded LA squad at home.
Yep.
There's just – they're not connecting the dots, whereas Toronto FC, we know what they're about. From the top to the bottom, they've got a plan. They've got a squad that can complete that plan, and they're building on it window to window. New York City FC, same deal. New York Red Bulls, same deal. Columbus Crew FC, same deal, despite a little bit of a lull there after the MLS Cup appearance. Atlanta United, I think they're actually on the backside of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive.
But
it's
feels like it still feels like they're closer to it than most of the Western Conference. And I mean, I like what I've seen from Montreal so far. I like what I've seen from Philadelphia so far. And you can, I mean,
Orlando could.
Orlando could.
Possibly.
Orlando feels like a Western Conference team, though, because you look at it and you're like, "That's they have a lot of talent, but it's such a work in progress." But even this past weekend, we saw it from New England. They came out with like intentionality and purpose and organization, and granted, it wasn't the prettiest soccer in the world, and they did eventually run out of gas, which cost them. But they looked like they knew exactly what they wanted to do and were committed to executing it, you know, 1 through 15 on the roster. And it made for a really entertaining game of soccer. We haven't seen as much of that out of the Western Conference.
Just through 4 weeks, so it's very, very early. We'll learn more as the season goes on. And we're about to learn where Zlatan Ibrahimovic is in his health. That is the big question right now. The signing is done. He's on TAM, 2 years, $1.5 million. Incredible piece of work from Chris Klein and the whole LA Galaxy. Jovan Kurowski apparently is the point man on this deal, using his experience in Europe and MLS and everything else to help seal it. David Beckham apparently playing a part too, so that keeps paying dividends year after year after year for this franchise.
I still think of Beckham's last game ever for PSG, you know, when he was playing with PSG.
When he comes off crying.
Yeah, he comes off crying because a minute before he was subbed off, there was this free kick in the perfect spot. And you're like, oh, my God, Beckham's going to have the fairy tale ending. He's going to stand over this free kick and he's going to bury it. It's going to be the last act in his professional career. And Zlatan was like, no, I'm taking this. This is my team. I'm taking this. And he ribbed it. Of course, he scored it. But it was like the last thing that happened in Beckham. Anyway.
That he took it and that he scored it is very Zlatan-esque. That ego is on its way to the StubHub Center. And look, this weekend is the first of many El Traficos, and I will not hear another name for this rivalry at this point. It's perfect in every way. El Trafico, 3 p.m. Eastern
on
Saturday.
Wait, who's complaining about
it? On Fox. I haven't seen anybody complain
Somebody said that we were getting pushback. It's not going to be Angelinos who give pushback because they know about traffic.
Yeah. So, look, we're going to go El Trafico unless you hit us up in, I don't know, one of many places to let us know we're
Change
wrong.
My mind.
Fox, 3 p.m. Eastern Saturday. Will he play? Will he not play? That's the question we'll have for the next, 6 days. Siggy Schmidt came out this week and said, hey, this Ola-Zlatan combo could be a thing for us. He says Ola's an important player for this team. He stretches the defense. And at times, Zlatan's played very well with that type of player. I'm sure we can establish a connection and a combination there. He's got to say that. Siggy Schmidt has to say that at this point. How will it actually go down?
I don't know. And that's going to be what's so fascinating about the Galaxy at this point. I mean, how many minutes do you think frequently injured 36-year-old is going to be able to give you, right? Like, can you write Zlatan's name into the starting lineup in pen? I don't think so.
No, you can't. And you also know that midweek on turf, there are a lot of scenarios in which LA will need points because that's the nature of this league. Over the course of the whole year, you're going to have to collect some points in places that you might not expect, and they won't have them.
Right.
And they weren't expecting to have them. I mean, I have to imagine that this is kind of one of those touch-and-go things where you're saying, okay, well, we think this could happen. It might have happened 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago when he left PSG. We thought we had him. Well, it didn't happen. So plan is if he's not here, and if he comes, it's a bonus, which is really what it feels like right now. Ola will continue to be A1 piece for this team.
I think so.
Can they coexist, though, if Siggy Schmidt goes that route?
So I think they can, but then the questions end up being pushed back a little bit further upfield into what do you do with Gio Dos Santos? And even maybe what do you do with Roman Alessandrini? Because those, you know, Dos Santos can really only play one position. He can't play on the wing. He can't play midfield. He is a second striker.
We're saying no chance, no way he can play on the wing.
I mean, I think they're going to try it again, but if you're lining up against the Galaxy and you see Gio Dos Santos on a given wing, you're like, well, I'm going to attack that wing all game. Yeah. It's going to be great. We're going to get a lot of the ball and we're going to, you know, maybe score a couple goals from that side. And it was like, look, Dos Santos and Alessandrini are designed for sort of a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-4-1-1. Okay, how do you get Ola Kamara and Zlatan Ibrahimovic onto the field in either of those formations?
And have defensive structure exactly. And not just ship goals. Mark Machado hit us up via email from Winchester. He says, this is how I would do it, guys. A 3-4-1-2 that looks like this. Bingham in goal, that's a given. The left center back in this is Ashley Cole. Shkelvic at the central center back position. Siani or Steers at right center back. He's got Alessandrini playing left wing back, which I think should probably be right wing back, realistically. Kitchen and Jonah Dos Santos in the midfield. Sebastian Legette at one of the wing back spots. He says right. I think you're probably playing him at left because you got to get the best out of Alessandrini if you do this. Center attacking midfielder is Gio. And then you've got Kamara above Zlatan.
I mean, you used the word realistically about halfway through, and I don't think that applies to almost any of it. You could do a 3-4-1-2, but you're not going to play Roman Alessandrini at wingback. You're probably not even going to be able to play Sebastian Legette, who has a motor, but like, he's not a wingback either. Can't play Ashley Cole at center back. Like the number of issues that are solved by bringing in Zlatan Ibrahimovic, there's a lot of them, but it creates just as many issues further back in this team.
Do you have faith in Ziggy Schmidt to solve those issues?
I do. I do, because look, this is Ziggy's last job, and this is the job that I think he's always loved the most and wanted the most. He's already won a double with the LA Galaxy, and I don't think that Ziggy is going to have any trouble benching anything that gets in between him and winning. He's not managing for the future. He's not worried about anything other than winning. And, you know, not to say that that was ever not the case. Every manager always cares about winning. But there's also, you have to think, well, long term, this guy's 27. I have to make sure that he's here. I don't think Ziggy's in a position to care about that anymore. If he doesn't get that right this year, he's out. And he knows it. So he's got to get it right, and I think that if somebody's not producing, they're going to find themselves at the bench.
I think he got it right this weekend, and to jump into some results here, Vancouver Whitecaps at home against an LA Galaxy side that were depleted, to say the least. I mean, they had two goalkeepers on the bench, and they didn't even fill up the bench. And they get a 0-0 at BC Place. We'll get to LAFC in just one second, because rumors are that they've completed their third DP signing of Andre Horta, and we've got that inside info for you. But look, this is one of those results over the course of a season that gets forgotten, that gets buried, that we don't talk about because, no offense to this game, but offense to this game, it was not fun to watch. 0-0, you get a point on the road with international break decimation, and Carl Robinson and the Vancouver Whitecaps on their side are just whacking crosses into the box, and nothing's coming. And this has been the complaint on the Caps for the better part of 2, 3, 4 seasons.
Yeah.
They don't have a plan B.
Yeah.
And with Kai Kamara, they double down on plan A. And when plan A doesn't work, you have results like this that just simply aren't acceptable.
Yeah, and it goes back to one of the things we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago about how Vancouver have been such a good team on the road. And part of the reason they're such a good team on the road is because you can counterattack all the time when you're on the road. If you don't want the ball, and the Caps never want the ball, you're going to get pinned, and that's going to leave space in behind, and that's how you get Breck Shea goals against Houston. LA wasn't going to do that. I was like, we're fine with a 0-0. And so Vancouver was fine with setting in 30 crosses, and that's how you get the 0-0. And I think, like you said at the top, man, this is there's still nothing out of central midfield, and there's still no real plan B when they have possession. And it's why I've never – bought a lot of Vancouver stock. I think you just need to figure stuff like that out. I mean, it works at the start of the season. It doesn't work as well later in the season, and it doesn't work hardly at all for the playoffs.
Back to the drawing board for the Whitecaps. That 0-0 is no good for them. LA, though, now they're trying to figure out what's up with Zlatan. Siggy says we'll see once he gets in. Once again, The first El Tráfico, Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Big Fox. Check that one out. On the other side, it looks like LAFC, after a long break here, they had that bye week. They're waiting around. They're trying to open Banc of California Stadium. It looks like they got their third DP slot locked in. Andre Horta appears to be done, according to EFCN's Jeff Carlisle. He's a 21-year-old. He's on loan to SC Braga right now from Benfica, and he's probably not going to get there till the summer. That's because Braga is saying, we're not going to release him from his loan just because you sealed the deal with this guy. So you're looking at probably July 10th or so. Reported fee, $7 million, about $1 million, probably a little bit more than $1 million in change in salary. And this is not a Zlatan-esque signing.
No, it's interesting, though. You know, I was talking about it with Simon and a couple other folks. Where does this – like, it's outside the mold. It's not a Giovinco-esque signing either, right?
Right.
And it's not exactly like what we've seen from the South American signings.
It's not a Diego Rossi signing
right.
either.
You know, like, he's roughly the same age, but, like, we don't see – there's no pipeline bringing players – young players who have teams that want them from Europe – to MLS. So this, like, well, I mean, I guess it kind of is for Scandinavia, but, like, to go from, you know, Benfica to Braga, which is, you know, probably the fourth or fifth biggest
still
team.
Still a big club, yeah.
Yeah. And then to go to an MLS expansion team, it's breaking the mold in a certain way. And I don't think it's existential. I think getting the players, the kids from South America, from Latin America, is existential for MLS. I think that is a step MLS always had to take, and it killed me that it took us so long to get there. I don't think this is existential. I think it's interesting. And it, for that reason alone, it's definitely worth keeping an eye on.
There were some rumors that he wanted to stay in Europe.
Yep.
And I would love to hear from him why it was that this is the right project for his career. Because every time when we talk about these moves, we talk about them from a club perspective. LAFC is getting this. But what's the player getting in this scenario? And I wonder what those first two games did for the kind of selling point that LAFC had to say, hey, look at Diego Rossi. Yeah, young guy comes up from Uruguay, from Peñarol, and he's just killing it.
Yeah.
And he's increasing his value. Look at Miguel Amirón. Look at all these kind of guys that came before you that maybe that you can be. And I can't imagine European dreams are dead for him. But it sounds like, according to the, Eric Gonsalves, I'll just throw his name out there, big Braga fan.
No, he's a Belenenses fan.
Oh, he's a Belenenses
fan.
He's not a
Braga fan.
Okay, well, he's got the inside info for us. He says he's been playing wide midfield, likes to move central, thinks that he and Carlos Vela could combine well in that recess striker link-up role. Probably should have been with Benfica's first team, according to Eric. And, you know, everything here, take with a grain of salt and put it on top of a delicious steak before you go to a Red
that
Bulls
you cook
game.
On a hot rock at Titanic.
Yes.
Shout
go
out.
To Titanic. If you are going to go to a Red Bulls game, go to Titanic. Free advertising for them right now. But I think you look at him and you say, based on this team right now, you probably say Latif Blessing moves to the bench. He plays one of the three behind Urania with Vela and Rossi, and they interchange and they do creative things and they pop up in weird spots, and the combination play is breathtaking, and we have big questions about the midfield behind them and how you defend, but it's okay because it's fun.
Yeah, I think they want to defend by having the ball. I think they're completely committed to defending by having the ball, and this should help them in that regard. And, you know, a lot can change between now and July when the window opens and he arrives, but I don't think that will.
Still unofficial. We'll see, though. I trust Jeff Carlisle's reporting. Stay tuned to that on MLSsoccer.com. Big news this weekend, Liam Ridgewell watched the Timbers game in Dallas from his couch. He was tweeting about it, saying he's going to come back, work hard as usual, but he was not in the team, and he's healthy. Giovanni Savarese, the new head coach of the Timbers, said, yeah, no, look, he's fit. He's ready to go. We just decided – this was a decision that I had to make. We needed to change something. We had to change the system. They went to the Christmas tree here, a 4-3-2-1. We had to change some players. But Savarese says it's still clear that Ridgewell is an important part of this project, that he's a fantastic player, that he's accepted this decision. He's eager to start playing again. Timbers get a 1-1 draw in Dallas. I think that's a pretty good result for them, yeah. All things considered. Dallas once again at home. Still struggling to string things together to get final product. Liam Ridgewell tweeting about a game from home as the captain of this team. Now, it's not shocking because we saw his play against the Red Bulls, and to be honest, the play of the entire team.
Watch that game from the couch, too.
Yeah, they gave, like, the whole team, did not look good in that game. But he in particular had some rough moments. What is the gambit here from Gio Savarese?
I think it's two things. Like, first of all, you want to coax – you need better effort from your players. And that is everyone, but it was most notably Ridgewell in that.
And he's also your captain.
Yeah.
So when your captain's lollygagging – like, come on.
It's a morale killer.
Time to send a real clear message.
And two is what we've seen across the league at this point. There's more depth. There's more good players in MLS than ever before. And it doesn't matter how much you make. It doesn't matter, you know, what your name is. And it doesn't matter, you know, how much hype there is. If you're not producing, you're going to end up on the bench. Liam Ridgewell did not produce in the first two games. And in fact, he was a detriment to the team. Bill Tuiloma stepped into that role. And did. He was really good for Portland this past weekend. So it might not just be a hard, you know, slap on the wrist and a missed game and a hard week of training that gets Liam Ridgewell back. I think he's going to have to go out there and outplay some folks.
It's going to be an interesting season in the Rose City.
It already is.
Because you had such an established kind of figurehead in Caleb Porter, and he had this way about him, whether it was with the media or with the team and the way he interpreted things. And Gio Savarese, having met both, I think is a different beast. And I'm very curious to see how he puts his stamp on the team, and he's wasted no time. No time at all. Leaving your captain at home, that's no joke. On the flip side, FC Dallas, once again, we keep saying, Mauro Diaz looks like he's back to or close to being his old self. Does he have the parts around him to maximize that self? Because every week that goes by, it seems like, you know what, you probably should have sold Urruti and Barrios when you had the chance. The new guys, Mosquera and newish Coleman, didn't impact this game when
two
they came
DPs.
On.
Two DPs right there.
You don't have Kellen Acosta. Carlos Guerrero can't do the job he's been taxed with. You're not creating enough. You're not efficient enough. You're not locked down enough on defense. You leave a guy on the field who's injured. He gets scored on. Otherwise, you might have won this game. It's just like Dallas went from basically where the Red Bulls are at right now to way down on the pecking order.
Yeah. No, they did, and it was a weird game from Oscar Pereja, really, because he left Anton Nedyakov in there.
It's hard, man. Nedyakov.
Nedyakov.
It's like it's a mouthful.
Yeah. Left Anton in there.
There you go.
Even though he was clearly hurt for the last 20 minutes of first half, he comes out to start the second half, and then he overlaps, loses the ball, is in no way, shape, or form fit enough to track back, which leaves Portland in a basically a 3v3 and Sebastian Blanco in isolation against a center back, which is just it's meat. That was bad from Oscar Pereja. I blame him much more than the players for that. And then the other thing is, like, okay, Lamar had a really nice goal and he's been scoring well, but he can't pass the ball. And Barrios, rather, is only north-south at this point. He's not adding anything in possession. And when you have a team that's sitting back, which Portland was, because they played the Christmas tree. They played a 4-3-2-1. Like, you need a little bit more creativity from the flanks, and they're just not getting it. And he's not seemingly able to diagnose the problem as it happens. And so it ends up just being like you're banging your head against the desk every week if you're an FC Dallas fan.
We'll see what happens with them. They have the talent. Look, you look at their roster.
I still think they have the talent.
That once again, go back to the West. They have the talent, But Bradley Phillips, no buts with him right now. Stay tuned to Mass Confrontation, our new sort of debate show on Facebook.
Andrew and I are
argue. 1v1. I don't want to give away my answers right now. I'm saving them for the show, but we have to discuss Bradley Phillips. Two goals and a 3-0 win against Minnesota United, who I might have got on the bench for that back line, like a warm body at this point, because Adrian Heath was decimated by the international window back there. Look, they gamely tried.
The Red Bulls were actually missing more starters. Just to put it into context.
It's a good caveat. Yeah, they tried gamely. It was not going to happen for them in this one. BWP got two. Alex Mawile got the first one, a little left-footed strike. And then he had, on the second BWP goal, arguably the pass of the season. And if you pay any attention to Red Bulls Twitter, Alex Mawile is a divisive figure. He is a... it's not just about the ponytail, which is hideous. It's a mini pony. God. It's terrible. It's horrible.
You have hair privilege. It's as a bald man, miserable. I look at that and I God, live your truth, Alex.
That's the guy in like late middle school who just like the alpha at your middle school is just an a-hole. And I'm not saying Alex Mawil is that guy because I don't know him and I don't think he's like that, but the head of hair just reminds me of that. But props to him, man, because he shout out to the haters. He had the final product in this game. But Brett Phillips is the story once again for this team because, you know, every time he goes down, he had that little moment where he kind of had the whiplash against the field, and he had another moment where he got kicked and he stayed down. And every time that happened, I was my stomach is just dropping because I know what's at stake for this franchise and this club and this team and this coach and these players. And Chivas is coming up in the semis of CCL, and this is a year to prove themselves that, you know, no Dax, no question, doesn't matter. The system shall triumph. But Brad Rhett Phillips is the linchpin of the system.
He's done it now. Three generations, if you want to think about it that way, for the Red Bulls, you know, the Henri sort of era, the Kleshtin Dax BWP era from 2015 to 2017, and now this sort of new young, like, this is a younger team other than BWP at the head and, you know, Luis Robles at the table, at the tail. It's all kids, and yep. And it's different, and it's you know, at some point you wait for him to drop off, and it's not happening. It's not just that he's not dropping off. He's arguably playing better all-around soccer than he ever has before.
Zlatan scores that second goal, and that's a highlight around the world. And I know that's like a lame, cliche thing to say, but the quality of his finishes, the quality of his runs, the quality of his work.
Yeah, I was thinking of the first goal, which was a nice one. The second goal, that finish is sick.
The right foot off the just – and he – I know that we'll set him up, but look, this is what Jesse Marsh had to say. Quote, there's this perception that Brad's not one of the premier players in this league, because you could make an argument that he's the best player to ever play in this league and the best goal scorer to play in this league, and he should be treated as such by everyone, including the referees. This was part of a rant about why BWP should get better treatment, but those are strong words.
Like, yeah.
He's saying one of the best players, best player, singular, to play in this league. And if you look at the stats, he's 11th all-time now on the MLS goal scoring list, 89, 88 in 5 years. That's the most ever in a five-year span in MLS. And if you look at the top 10 of goal scorers, total goals in MLS's history, he has the best goals per 90 by 0.12. Taylor Twellman, which I felt like was perhaps insurmountable in that regard at 0.6. Well, BWP is 0.72.
Yeah.
He's got 106 in all comps for the Red Bulls.
Yeah. And
this is a guy who came on like trial, and everybody said this is the epitome of what would be a terrible signing, like kind of a washed dude from the Champo.
Yeah. No, and he just keeps getting better and making good. And to contextualize it, Robbie Keane was 0.69. Mamadou Diarra, who, you know, these are all guys who are not top 10, was 0.72.
In a completely different era.
Yeah. David Villa, 0.71. So, like, if you go back and you look at the all-time greatest goal scorers, like, he's right there. Now, Stern John is still out ahead at 0.89, and what Joseph Martinez is doing might end up rewriting all of it, but for this last 5 years, it's remarkable. And I just want to read something that Graham Parker put together a couple of years ago about BWP. England's a place where I learned everything about football, and I love it, but it's also a place where I want to say, quote, there's a lot to learn from other places. And I was surprised when I came here, not just at the standard, but let me tell you that after I left Manchester City until the last couple of years, there wasn't a lot of coaching in my career. I've had more coaching in the last few years in team shape and tactics, how to play certain roles, than I ever did in England. In England, it's more, we need to get out of this league or not get relegated. And it's not like I don't think the American League could maybe do with some of the fight that brings to a player winning every tackle, but it also means that a lot of young players don't get coached because the team just wants to get out of the league. I mean, that says a lot for what Jesse Marsh and this Red Bulls team, and let's go back to Mike Pecky as well, because BWP had his first great year with the Red Bulls under Mike Pecky. That says a lot about what has happened here, I think, in the last 5 years in MLS. And what has to translate is that the coaching that BWP got has to – it has to be given to domestic kids. We have to, and it's not a coincidence that the man who said this is coached by, you know, Jesse Marsh and the Red Bulls, and we see what they're doing by, you know, bringing every 16-year-old with a pulse through that academy system, and Mike Becky, the guy who's doing something similar with RSL. So that's just, of course, I always bring it back to player kids, but BWP is a perfect example of why players at all levels, at all times, need coaching.
What I really like about BWP and this organization right now, the Red Bulls, is that transition, but the role that he's playing in the transition. When you watch him on the field after the game, you know, Jesse Marsh comes up to him and has him in a headlock, and they're smiling and they're talking. If you watch any of the, and I know this is through a lens that Red Bull wants to give to you, but the media that the Red Bull has put out, where BWP has taken on, he's always said, I'm a quiet guy. I'm not a guy who wants to be that vocal leader. Well, Jesse said, you need to be that guy for us. We need that from you, and he's brought it. And so not only has BWP said that, hey, I got that coaching here, he's now becoming that extension, that tentacle that can go down to those younger players and say, hey, next generation, this is what I learned. These are my experience. Look, listen to these guys. They know more than you maybe think, and they'll take us to the place we want to go. And right now the Red Bulls, you said, are perhaps
I think
the best
team I've seen this year. So the question I have for you is, do they trade him next January?
I hope not, man. Luis Robles said this after the game. I think Jesse should go to sleep every night thanking God for a Bradley Wright Phillips. If you trade that man after a quote like that, I'm sure there were plenty of those about Sasha and Dax. But
well, Robles is wearing the captain's armband, so he's in danger too.
Robles is trying to push the attention elsewhere. He's like, yeah, but look at Bradley. He's great, man. He's great. You can't lose him. Let's talk about the rest of the weekend. Remember, coming up after the break here, Dave Goss, the Leco Escandarian, talking youth development and the U.S. national team against Paraguay. Play Your Kids is definitely going down in that one. Sam Stachel is going to join us in a second. He's got the inside info from Chris Klein on Zlatan. And, of course, the mailbag. Revs, you mentioned their press. They came out and they tried to do it to NYCFC, and it worked for a half.
Yeah.
Didn't
work for 90. They pressed so high and so hard. Like, you know you're going to run out of gas when that happens. But it was a weird game, man, because usually teams that are being pressed don't have 70% possession.
They start lumping.
And they don't complete 82% of their passes, which NYCFC did. Like, if you just looked at the numbers, you would think, you know what, they just controlled the game and blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't that. It was NYCFC are fanatically committed to playing out of the back. And they had the skill to do it to a point. But without Alex Ring, they didn't have the skill to turn that possession into actual, like, zone-moving penetration.
Ebenezer Afori could be a good player for this team. He will need to be over the next month. He had a lot of bad giveaways under pressure.
He did.
Which, look, the pressure was pretty intense. But
it was.
That's something that other teams will look at and say, hey, that might be a chink in the armor. That might be a place that we can exploit NYCFC.
Yeah, and I think it will be, and I think it has been. And I mean, credit to Patrick Vieira. He knows how he wants his team to play, and he's not going to deviate. And it has brought them a lot of success. Look, they came back and they got a point on the road here, despite playing, you know, shorthanded on turf against a team that was really all in. I mean, the Revs were just buzzing, man. They played with real intensity in this one, and I thought NYCFC weren't going to be up for it. They did. They got the point. That's how you win at home, draw on the road.
Mm-hmm. 10 points right now. They're not in first place in the East. Crew SC are based on disciplinary points. Yes, you heard that correctly. But no David Villa, no Anton Tenerholm in this game, no Rodney Wallace, no Alex Ring, Ronald Matarrita injured. So Patrick Vieira, he's got a deep squad. Both sides of New York, extremely, extremely deep. Crew SC, though, top of the table. 3-1 win against DC United. Ben Olsen is hacked off in this one because the third goal he believes never should have happened because Lawis Abubakar, I think pretty clearly, fouled Lucho Acosta. You can listen to my opinion on that one and instant replay with Stephen Keel. But end of the day, no Giassi's artist goal. Doesn't matter. Christian Martinez, though, nice little coming out game for him. We'd been waiting for the final product, waiting for him to get on the score sheet. He had a goal, I think, way back in, I don't know, when he first got to the Crew, like in 2016, but really nothing since then in terms of playing time, in terms of production. Berhalter stuck with him for four games here, and it paid off.
It did, and you could see why he stuck with him, because the kid he plays with commitment, right? His energy, you know, his energy is always good. He's always buzzing. He gets into good spots. The final product hasn't always, I mean, it's rarely been there, but it was this time. He picked up two assists. He was a constant pest. This is just a good, well-rounded team. I'm not sure that this was their best effort, but the fact that they were able to trot out there and, you know, a B-minus effort and come out with a 3-1 win tells you a lot that you need to know about Columbus.
I like Lalo Sobhakar taking in the starting spot. They've got at the Combine last year, we loved him. You just never know how these guys are going to translate out of the draft, and he got into a perfect situation, and it's working out for him. Pipe Higuain hit the 50-50 club in this one, chronically underrated Federico Higuain. He doesn't look like a dominant soccer player. He thinks like a dominant soccer player, and that's what matters in Greg Berhalter's system. I thought he had an interesting quote this week. People are talking about that system and saying, wow, you guys play great soccer. This is incredible stuff. And people was like, you know, we've been doing this for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Wait,
at least.
Where you been?
It reminds me of that quote, the time that Thierry Henry was singing Will Trapp's praises way back in October of 2014, talking about how Columbus play and how they play out of the back and they keep the ball pretty much at all costs, and how impressed he was by that at that time. And it's still the same old song, and they're doing it, I think, better than ever.
Sporting KC's song, it's on like shuffle right now. I'm not sure what's going on with them. Jekyll and Hyde, this is the league's best defense from a year ago, from years. I mean, down the line, this has been one of the best units for a long, long time. They're just leaking goals. 2-2 draw in Colorado that looked like they were going to get blown out. They're down 2-0 within 10 to the Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
Down 2-0 within 10 to the Rapids. Joe Mason, legend, not actually a legend, just want to throw that out there. Don Baggi gets a goal from Edgar Castillo that might have been set up by a handball in the trap. Maybe check out instant replay for that one. I don't think Stephen Keel agreed with me. But, you know, this is a blown opportunity for the Rapids. I don't know what the right word is here. I'm not going to say that. It's almost like they backed up from the brink. They're like, oh, we have this breakthrough. And then they got a little bit scared, and they said, oh, I don't know if we can do this. I'm not sure if we can. And Sporting KC took the opportunity in the second half. But that doesn't stop the fact that KC are one of the most entertaining teams in the league to watch, because you just don't know what's going to happen on either side of the ball.
Yeah, it's been wild. It doesn't feel like a KC team at all. And I think you were saying, Andrew, it took them 13 games to give up 9 goals.
Paul Carr gets the credit for this one. 13 games to give up 9 goals a year ago, 3 games in 8 minutes this year.
Yeah. That's a problem. And they, you know, Peter Vermees has, I think the report was, he scoffed at the idea that there's a problem with the defense. And I can't imagine he's scoffing anymore after this. Like, they're not just giving up a lot of goals. They're giving up a lot of really good chances. Like, they are, you know, the teams are able to just sort of drive it into them, into the heart of their defense, in the way that they haven't been able to in years past. And it's hard to diagnose exactly what was going wrong. I mean, you could see there's individual, like, what is Ike Opara doing on that first goal? You know, there's individual breakdowns that you could pick out, but it also seems like systemically this team is kind of at sea.
Where's the pressure on the ball from the midfield on the second goal?
Yeah.
Ike keeps him on, but, like, come on, you can't let somebody turn in midfield, get his eyes up, and Joe Mason just run in behind. Like, if you're going to play a high line, you better have pressure on the ball. Otherwise, that's going to happen over and over and over. A point for both these teams. Sam Stachkel is on the line right now. Gam, Tam, and Sam, MLSsoccer.com national writer. Every single Monday, we chat with him. Sam, what's up, man?
What's up, Weeby? How you doing, dude?
Good. I'm enjoying these weekly chats. Paul Tenorio on Thursdays, Sam Stachkel on Mondays. Check out their work at MLSsoccer.com. Our national writers, and you just got off the phone with Chris Klein, the president of the Galaxy. I wonder what there could be to talk about right now.
Well, LA Galaxy 2 season just began, so, you know, lots on the table.
Gotcha.
For the president of the Galaxy. But it's kind of funny when you say president of the Galaxy. You can kind of take that title a different way.
Yeah.
But no, obviously talking about LAFC coming up this weekend. So lots of stuff there that I'll have on the site later.
Give us
today,
a little hint,
later
though.
Monday.
Could we see Zlatan this weekend? Is that possible?
Maybe. He was a little coy about that, but they don't really know. They still don't know exactly when he's going to arrive in LA. So it's hard to say exactly whether or not he's going to be playing or not. When I asked him when is he going to arrive, he was like, "Oh, I don't know. It might be later this week. We're still trying to finalize that." And so I asked the follow up. I was like, "So is he out of the question for this weekend?" And he's like, "Oh, I wouldn't say he's out of the question for this weekend. I believe that was something close to the quote." So
gotcha.
We could see him this weekend. We'll see. I mean, the game's already sold out, so they're not trying to move more tickets by saying that. So we shall see. I'm personally hoping for it. I mean, what better way for Zlatan to make his MLS debut than in the first El Trafico? Is that what we're calling it on this show?
That is what we're calling it. We've decided, okay. Matt Doyle and I, along with everyone else I've talked to, has said this is it. El Trafico is the name. I just think it's interesting that you can get a lion. You can rent a lion and have a lion be on time, but you're not sure when Zlatan might show up.
Zlatan shows up when he wants to show
That's
up.
That's true. That's very, very true. When you look at this team, we discussed it with Doyle here just in the last, 20 minutes. We're trying to fit everybody on the field, and that's like the mental exercise that everybody's doing, including Siggy Schmidt. How would you do it? How do you feel it might happen? Did Chris Klein
How
give
would
away
I
anything
do
there?
It, man. Yeah. I asked Chris a little bit about it. He was like, that's for Ziggy and the technical staff to figure out. I'm not going to meddle in their area. So he didn't talk too much about the specifics. I mean, for me, you could go any number of different ways, right? I mean, I think the way Ola Kamara has been playing, we saw him score a hat trick over the weekend for Norway on international duty. It's going to be hard to take him off the field, I think. I don't think you can necessarily sideline him. I don't really know how all the pieces work, though, because Giovanni, his best spot is probably as a second forward. So if you play, obviously, Zlatan and Ola, you can't play Giovanni in that spot. I think I would give it a go, though, with Zlatan and Ola up top, Alessandrini and Giovanni on the wings. And I guess Jonathan and Perry Kitchen in the middle. I don't know if that's enough defensive balance, but I think you have to try it, right? Don't you have to try it?
Yeah, you at least have to trot it out. Like, just as, it might blow up in your face, or it might be the most exciting thing of all time.
Exactly.
I think a lot of it depends on Zlatan's knee. Did Klein have any?
And that's the other part of it, is we're going to see a lot of different looks, right? Because Giovanni and Jonathan are going to miss time, most likely, for the World Cup with Mexico. Right, Alessandrini's hurt. Zlatan is going to need probably some breaks here and there. Who knows where his knee's at exactly? So we're going to see a lot of different setups, and they have the depth to be able to pull that off with Leggett and Boateng and a few other options they have in the midfield and the attack. So I think we're going to see a lot of different looks. It's going to be interesting to see, though, because on that same token, it's like, well, with guys coming in and out, are you able to really develop a best lineup and develop that chemistry that you need to be able to really pull that off? Because it's not like you have a preseason with them, right? So so that'll be interesting. It's going to be it's one of those good problems for Ziggy Schmidt, but it's definitely going to be a challenge for him, I think.
Did you ask Chris about the knee? Because everything comes back to, like, well, if he's healthy. I assume he's healthy. Why would he do all this if he wasn't?
We talked a little bit about it, and it was just, it was like, well, we signed him, we looked at him, everything's fine. He's been playing, he's been getting some minutes. And the fact that he says he could play this weekend after hopping off a plane from Manchester would seem to indicate that the knee is fine, right? If it wasn't, then they wouldn't have signed him. But, how well does a 36-year-old, soon-to-be 37-year-old rebound from a major injury like that? Who knows? I would say the average 37-year-old doesn't rebound from that very well. But if there's anything we've learned over the last couple of decades, it's that Zlatan is not average. So we'll see, right? That's kind of the big unknown here. But definitely something to keep an eye on.
I'm 31. If that happens to me, put me in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. Yuram Avcisyan is no longer at RSL. We've been following this via your reporting for a long time. It was kind of a win rather than if situation for Euro and RSL. What went down with this buyout? Seems like he's found a new club now. How does that affect the cap?
Yeah, well, it's not a buyout. It's they waived him before the start of the season. So basically, he went on loan to Djurgården in Sweden today, and I probably butchered that pronunciation. But he went on loan there. It doesn't affect the cap at all from RSL's perspective because that was already taken care of when they waived him. So by waiving him, they opened up the designated player slot. They saved $504,375 worth of cap room, and they created a senior roster spot. But they were still on the hook for paying him. He had a guaranteed contract through 2019, still has a guaranteed contract through 2019. So they're still on the hook for paying him. By him going on loan, despite the fact that he was waived, RSL still owns his contract. So he's not off their books. So if he's going to move to a team, they either have to buy him out or transfer or loan him. And this was a loan. By going on loan, basically, Djurgården's going to pay part of his salary. So RSL is no longer going to be on the hook for his entire salary. Djurgården's going to pay some of it. I've been told that RSL is still paying a majority of that salary, however. So a little bit of relief for the RSL pocket. But in terms of cap space, that was already taken care of. So no change for that from today.
This move for Jura was inevitable. But I remember a time when his signing for RSL felt like this huge coup. This great signing for them that was going to help them, you know, get over the hump. What happened?
Well, I think it was pretty clear that he didn't see eye to eye with Mike Pecky. You know, in terms of what the exact specifics of it, I'm not 100% sure, and I don't know that we ever will be 100% sure. He was getting a lot of run under Jeff Cassar. He had a decent first year, I think 9 goals and 3 assists in 2016. They bought him permanently. From Spartak Moscow, where he had been on loan from in 2016. And then Jeff Cassar got fired, I think, 3 games into the season in 2017. And Mike Pecky came in. Those two did not see eye to eye for whatever reason. Didn't agree on philosophy or work ethic or whatever it was. I think Pecky came out and said he needed a little bit more effort from Jura that he wasn't getting. And I guess from his perspective, I guess he never got that. Whether or not that was correct, you know, that's I guess a matter of one's opinion. He did finish as the co-leading scorer for RSL last year, despite his limited minutes. So there's definitely something there. But yeah, it's kind of a bittersweet end, I guess, for something that was supposed to be a nice little homecoming and turned sour pretty quickly, unfortunately, for all parties involved.
We're going to talk to Aleko Escanera via David Goss here after the break. They're at the GA Cup right now, but I want to ask you about some of these prospects there. And I think in terms of Gianluca Busio in particular, who is now with Sporting Kansas City, but they brought in from North Carolina, I believe. He was not a member of their academy. You've been doing a little reporting on this. We're going to see it on MLSsoccer.com soon. Take me through this new trend in MLS where teams go outside of their immediacy to bring players in, whether it be the academy or the first team.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a different way to approach things. You know, I've written a lot about the Red Bulls and their USL team, Red Bulls 2, and kind of how they stock that with a bunch of academy kids and use it as a bridge to the first team. That's all well and good, but in some markets, like a Kansas City, for instance, you don't have the level of academy talent, or at least the depth of academy talent, like you do in a place in New York. That's not a function of anyone in Kansas City or New York. That's just a function of population, right? So in order to kind of supplement that and to kind of circumvent that lack of population and therefore that lack of depth and talent, you see teams like Sporting KC, and they're not the only team doing this, but you see them kind of start recruiting outside of their own homegrown territory. So Sporting KC has gone a lot into North Carolina with Gianluca Busio, as you mentioned, Jalen Lindsay, another kid from North Carolina that signed a first team deal with them. They have a few academy kids that just signed amateur contracts with Swope Park Rangers, their USL team from North Carolina. They have a few from California as well. So to kind of fill out their academy and kind of get it producing at a level where they can compete with the teams that are in markets that might have 10 times the people as their metro area, they kind of are finding different creative ways to do it. And I think that's kind of a real interesting thing, right? You know, in a league like MLS, where there's sort of a cap on everything you can do, a lot of it is just kind of finding the market inefficiencies where you can get that little competitive edge. And Sporting KC took an area where they might have had a disadvantage in terms of population, and are kind of working it so that they can even or level the playing field, or even maybe even get ahead of a few teams in bigger markets with their academy. So I think that's interesting. And I'll be doing some more reporting on it this week and have a story up on it at some point here in the next few days.
You can see that at MLSsoccer.com. You can follow on Sam on Twitter at Sam Stashkel. Gam, Tam, and Sam every single Monday right here on ETR. Sam, thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks, Weeby.
All right, we're going to go to break right now. Dave Goss and Aleko Escanderian on the other side from Frisco. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, Hi, this is Josie Altador from the U.S. national team, and you're listening to MLS Extra Time Radio.
Welcome back to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. We are on a field trip today out in Frisco, Texas. I, of course, am David Goss, and I have a special guest alongside me, former MLS player, U.S. national team player a little bit, Aleko Eskandarian. Aleko, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we are here at the Generation Adidas Cup. That is the MLS Youth Championships. Happens once a year. FC Dallas hosting us on the grounds of Toyota Soccer Center here in Frisco, Texas. And this competition, it's the big youth tournament for all MLS teams as they build up to get here. You are here now, and what is your role here for this tournament?
It serves a couple different purposes. Obviously, my role in the player relations department, youth development's a big part of that. So first and foremost, just want to get a good grasp of our top prospects coming through the youth academy system. And it's a great time to connect as well with all our academy directors and coaches and just be on the same page in terms of what direction we're headed in, who to keep an eye on, and also see how our kids measure up against international competition. That's obviously the barometer for us, and we're very progressive in terms of how the academy system is growing here and what the talent pool looks like. So it's great to see these international clubs coming here and putting their best foot forward against our MLS teams, and may the best clubs win.
So we're currently sitting alongside RSL playing Monterrey in their final group stage game. And part of this field trip is the conditions, the Texas wind rolling through. You can all hear that in the background. So we apologize for any noise. Take us back, though, Aleko. Everyone knows you from your MLS playing days, and you were one of top strikers in the league for a number of years. What happened at the end of your career? How did you end up your pathway to this role now with the player relations department in Major League Soccer?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's been well documented with the concussions that I had that cut my career short. So in 2009, I believe, I suffered my last concussion, which ultimately ended my career. Set me back in many ways, and I had to step away from the game for quite a bit for my own health. But decided to go back to school, finish my degree at the University of Virginia, and then slowly got back into the game, more on the coaching side. First as a volunteer coach at UVA while I was finishing my degree, and then that parlayed into becoming the academy director and youth technical director at Philadelphia Union, where Peter Novak gave me an opportunity to get in there and really understand the landscape a bit more in terms of a team. I think Philly was only 2 years old at the time, and the academy was starting from scratch. So just laying the foundation and groundwork to starting an academy, and just kind of relearning the scouting process and all that goes into starting an academy these days. And then he asked me to also sit on the bench as an assistant coach with the first team. And I guess I kind of got my passion in coaching through that. I moved on shortly after to the New York Cosmos. I was an assistant coach there with Giovanni Savarisi for the last 4 years. And Gio was great because he also gave me a green light and freedom to explore the front office side of things as well in terms of scouting and negotiating contracts and things like that. So gained a lot of experience through that, and it just became the natural progression for me to fall more on the business side. And that led to, you know, an opening in the MLS offices, and I made the jump last year.
You mentioned youth development, a big part of what you're doing, player relations. What was your goal? What was your idea when you took this job of what you wanted to bring, of what you wanted to accomplish?
I think as a former player, I think I had a lot to add and bring to the office. And just through my experiences of being involved in every level of the game, whether it's, you know, high school, club, college, NPSL, NASL, MLS, you know, all these different levels that I've kind of been at one way or the other, whether as a player, as a coach. Just kind of sharing my experiences and my two cents with how I look at things. And the best part about it for me is how much I'm learning from everyone that's been at the office. Guys like Todd Durbin and Lino DiCollo, who have been there basically since the inception and are able to educate me on how this league started and has progressed over the years. And it's been great for me to get that education to find out why we're at where we're at and how we got there and where we want to get to.
And where we want to get to is youth development, a big part of it, right? Teams producing world-class players, teams playing rosters heavily filled with homegrown players. You're one department in one city in the U.S., and you've got 23 clubs across two countries. What's the focus for this department of how you can affect youth development going forward?
We just want to improve. That's the biggest thing for us. Obviously, I think we're now at a moment where we are able to produce young American players that can compete at the highest level in Europe. We've obviously seen the Christian Pulisics of the world who developed here in Pennsylvania, who was actually part of the Philadelphia Union Academy when I was there, obviously make the jump to Germany and find tremendous success. And so we've showed that we are capable of producing very, very promising talent. And now the question is, can we do that more often? Can we do that in an organized, sophisticated manner where it's not just a one-off here and there that's popping up? And that's really the goal. And part of it's education. We obviously have a huge country here with lots of resources, which is an advantage, but it's also detrimental as well. It's tough to get the best players together more often, playing together and testing each other and pushing each other. Unfortunately, with our landscape being so big, there's also the possibility for players to get complacent, being the best player in their area and not seeing what's going on in the rest of the country or for the rest of the world, for that matter. So that's the challenge that we face, and events like this at GA Cup is a great opportunity to bring all the best players together, have them compete against each other, and also test themselves against international competition. So we just want to continue to raise the bar year after year and continue on the ways that we're going.
What have you seen so far? What have you tried to preach in terms of best practices? Is it organization from a top to bottom? Is it specific coaching skills? Is it specific time periods of when to work with players? What is it that you've learned, or what is it that you're seeing as best practice?
Yeah, I don't think there's just one way to do it. Obviously, with the game, the way it's progressing, you're always seeing different modernized ways of developing talent. I think we've taken steps to get to where we are now, and it's night and day compared to where it was 5 years ago, compared to where it was 10 years ago. So we're definitely headed in the right direction. I think the emphasis now is just on the individual development plan. A part of that obviously falls on the academies and the coaches, but a big part of it is also the individual players themselves, doing the work when no one's looking. And that's something that you see all around the world. You know, kids who, you know, maybe soccer is their only shot of making it in life. You know, they're going to spend 24 hours a day improving on their skills and hungry for that opportunity to prove themselves. Whereas over here, we have distractions, you know, and there are blessings as well, whether it's school, whether it's job opportunities, whatever it is. We're afforded with a lot of different options at a young age that will help us in the long run. But it's important for the best soccer talent to really try to maximize their potential, and that means making all the sacrifices that's needed to make it to the next level. So there's no one way to do it. I think we're headed towards the right path. I think you see now, especially tactically, our teams are a lot better in terms of how we play and our playing style and how we match up against international teams. But that individual talent is what needs to get to that next step. You know, yes, can we play two-touch all around the field? That's great. But when the time comes for it, do we have those players that are going to take two, three players on, create a mismatch, create an opportunity, and really stand out? So we're getting there little by little, but I think we're all encouraged by what we've seen so far.
From your time quite a little bit ago as a youth player to now, what do you see as big changes, or are there big changes in what you see in these youth players, youth setups, coaches?
Huge changes in terms of depth. I think, you know, I get asked that question a lot, and I think overall the amount of kids playing soccer and the amount of, you know, average soccer players, will say, is, you know, double or maybe triple from when I was playing. In terms of special players, I don't know that we're producing as many special players, and I think part of that is because we have so many above average players that are kind of leveling the playing field, that kids are almost hesitant to take that jump and go to the extra mile. I think that's part of why we're here, and that's what our great coaching staffs are working on, is yes, you can play at 80% and still win a game, but we need you guys to push your to 110%. You know, push that extra mile to really stand out and be special. And that takes a lot of hard work. That takes a lot of sacrifice. I think when I was younger, it happened almost organically, where I'll use myself as an example. I knew I had to score 5 goals in a high school game in order for my team to have a chance. So taking that responsibility at a young age shows your or teaches you leadership qualities, teaches you how to win, how to lose. And I think that's part of maybe when you're playing with above average players, you know, you're not really forced to take on that responsibility as much. So that could be detrimental. But that's something that we'll just work through. And obviously competitions like this is where you'll see kids having to do a bit more, especially when they play the Flamengos and River Plates and Real Madrids of the world. It's not enough to just play at 80%. So tests like this is what's eventually going to push these kids to dig deeper and hopefully find some talent that they didn't even know they had.
Is this cultural in your mind that these players, you know, sometimes in the U.S. we sort of don't pride the stars for taking over or trying to do too much, especially in a game of soccer where we talk about being a cohesive unit and all 11 players. Do you see that as an American thing, a worldwide thing, an MLS thing, a Canadian thing?
Yeah, it's a bit cultural, but I think we've come a long way in terms of our culture. So that just takes time. That's not going to happen overnight. Some of it is coaching as well. You know, even watching these games, sometimes you'll hear a coach say, you know, too many touches, that wasn't the right decision. For me personally, at this level, I want to see kids make mistakes. I want to see kids take too many touches in the attacking third and try to make something happen. The game is the best teacher. And if you're not making any mistakes, then you're not getting better, in my opinion. So that's something that you have to work through. Obviously, you want to play for the result and learn how to win and lose and all that stuff. But in my opinion, these kids have to have the green light to go express themselves creatively, to push themselves, to push their boundaries. And the best way to do that is to make mistakes. Yes, that should happen on the training ground as well. But, you know, I have no problem seeing a kid try to take 2-3 guys on and lose the ball, because at least now he's gaining something. Okay, I know what I can and what I can't do. I know what my limitations are. But if we have every kid just playing 2-touch and, you know, until they lose it, I'm not seeing the individual growth through that. So it's a fine balance. I think we've come a long way in producing players that could play quickly 1-touch, 2-touch, which is extremely important. But it's a fine balance. I don't want us to suck the creativity out as well.
We're going to talk about creativity because we're going to talk about the U.S. national team in a bit. But one of the things we've seen grow, and I think this year it's looked most obvious, is a top-down culture in some clubs of a style that we play, a system that we play. We just watched Columbus Crew SC fall to Seattle Sounders, playing very similar to what Greg Berhalter does, his son, of course, one of the players in the team. But we've seen that from the Red Bulls. We've seen that from FC Dallas a bit. What do you think of that philosophy? I mean, is it helpful for young players, or does it shackle them for a while of only really learning one way?
No, I think it's okay. The big thing is that we finally have first teams who have identities. You know, there was a while where there was so much turnover, whether it was coaches, players, that an identity of a club could change sometimes 2-3 times in one season. So I think it's great to have some continuity in the front offices and the coaching staffs of these clubs, and allowing them to build an identity, allowing the fans to embrace that identity. Now, I think, yeah, the academies should it should trickle down. However, you should never be pigeonholed. And I think that's something that I've stressed in my conversations with academy directors and youth coaches. These kids should be comfortable playing multiple formations, multiple positions. You never want to see just one system being implemented. And yes, when they step on the field against Real Madrid, it should look like the Columbus Crew or New York Red Bull or whoever it is. But at the same time, these kids have to train to be able to play in a bunch of different formations, tactical changes, positions, whatever it is, because in soccer, the game changes how you play. If you line up thinking you're going to play a certain way and your opponent lines up some completely different way, you have to be able to adjust. It's a game of adaptation, and if you can't adjust, you can't adapt, you're gonna really struggle and find it hard to play. So that's just something that comes with playing, and even playing pickup. You know, people underestimate how valuable that is to play pickup, where if you're playing 5-a-side, 7-a-side, you're going to have to defend. You're going to have to attack. You can't hide. And that's where you can really shape your all-around game, and you'll feel comfortable wherever you're throwing on an 11-11 field.
You talked about the tactical identity, the change in MLS. A lot of the coaches we're talking about, guys you grew up playing against, guys you grew up playing with. What do you make of your generation that's now moved into the front office, the technical directors? You got Chris Klein and what he does, Greg Berhalter, Jesse Marsh, all these guys that you know well. What do you see that your generation is bringing, and did you expect, or what were the conversations like back in the day when you were coming through playing about what your futures would be like?
Yeah, I think we all talked about it. I'd look back at when I was at Chivas USA. I think my carpool group was Jesse Marsh, Ante Razov, Jim Curtin, Zach Thorne, all guys who are now coaching in the league in some fashion or another. And I think we always talked about our experiences, what we felt could be better, what needed to change. And it's no surprise to me that a bunch of guys from my generation are playing are now in these important pivotal roles. And it's only going to get better and grow from there. I think there's still a lot of room for international coaches and whatnot to come in as well. You see what Tata Martino's doing in Atlanta. So there's room for everyone. There's always room for growth and improvement. But I think understanding the American player, understanding the American system is extremely valuable. We've seen a lot of foreign coaches come in, and it's just very tough for them to grasp the culture change that we talked about. And so with us growing with the league, growing up in these different pockets around the country that had clubs that have now turned into academies, and seeing the shift in training regiments and all that stuff, we can really add a lot to the continued growth.
Let's talk about the U.S. national team. They play Paraguay Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time in North Carolina. This is a chance to hit that reset button. The U.S. fails to qualify for the World Cup, a tough blow for anyone associated to the game in this area, especially people like you who have experience putting on those colors and representing it. When people talk about the U.S. national team, one of the conversations that comes up is a style, or what is the American player? Do you believe that there has to be an American style? Is there something that we already have that you've seen? What do you make of that conversation?
I think we have our own style, and it's fluid. It could change. We have a large country with a lot of people from all sorts of backgrounds, and I think it's great to, you know, me being from New Jersey, obviously it's such a huge melting pot. I loved part of what I loved growing up and why I'm so proud to be American is I played in the Jamaican leagues. I played in the Mexican leagues. I played with, you know, the South Americans, with, you know, the Armenians. So there's so many different group of people that play a certain different style. And when it's all blended together, I think it's great. And I think that's our style, is that we can be a mix of a bunch of different things. Like we talked about with the youth, there's no need to pigeonhole any certain system or whatever it is. I think it could always change. It could always evolve. We have so many talented players, and I think the goal at the end of the day is always to get the most out of your best players. So whatever system that falls under, whatever tactical formation that falls under, it should be whatever maximizes our best players. So that to me is never something that you have to be stuck playing a certain way. And I think we've had coaches that have experimented and done different things. You know, there was a time where it was, okay, we're, you know, you line us up on paper against a better team. Talent-wise, they were better than us. So now you have to find a different way to get a result. As this thing continues to grow and as our top players continue to reach higher levels, I think now we'll be able to play a different style where we played our strengths and don't have to necessarily worry about the opponent's strengths.
Do you believe that at that top level we're better than we used to be? Do you believe that we're getting closer to other national teams?
It's tough to say. It's tough to say. International football is tricky because obviously results are what push, you know, the rankings and obviously qualifying and things like that. But overall, when you look at our depth, yes, I think we have come a decent way in terms of shoring up some areas that were deficient in the past. But we could always be better. And even though we might be getting better and improving, how much is everyone else improving? That's something that you always are chasing after. So at the end of the day, we have the resources, we have the personnel, we have everything in place to grow as a soccer nation. We just have to put it together. And sometimes you miss, you know, sometimes you make mistakes and you don't qualify. It's, you know, to me, it's not something that you have to blow everything up and start from scratch. You just have to identify the mistakes and make it better. And there's plenty of people in this country that are capable of making things better. It's just a matter of putting them in the right positions and going for it.
Dave Sarokin in charge for this game. He's got one or two more friendlies coming up. What do you want to see? What's your expectation from what the U.S. is going to try and do?
I like the roster that I just saw for this match against Paraguay. A lot of young players. Seeing the Zach Steffens of the world getting an opportunity. Seeing Matt Miasca getting back in the fold is going to be important. You see the Tim Weahs of the world now, who is obviously making a name for himself in Europe. That's the next level now, is having guys who are proud to represent this country, are going to give it 110% when they're out on the field for us, and who are really proving their value domestically, internationally, whatever it is. Those are the guys that are going to set the next barometer, and it's going to be what influences the young players that are on these fields today to, say, you know what, when I'm playing against Real Madrid like NYCFC was yesterday, I'm not scared. There's no fear anymore of, oh man, we have to play defensively, we have to, try to eke out a tie or win. Now we could go toe to toe with these teams and really express ourselves and try to improve. And that to me is such a big change from what it was 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Even myself, when I was playing, even though I was never scared of anyone or anything like that when I played, there's always that little bit of, oh, we're an American team playing against an international team. And there's that feeling out process where you have to get a couple good plays in to almost get your confidence back up. Where now I'm seeing a bit of a cultural change, and these young kids that are doing so well in Europe are a big part of allowing the stars of tomorrow to dream bigger.
One of the big pieces in terms of forward growth has been the CCL results. Jesse Marsh and Greg Vanney leading their teams over some Mexican opposition in big moments in big games. They're two of the names that are mentioned for the U.S. national team coach. Some other guys you know very well, Greg Berhalter, Peter Vermees. What do you want to see from that position for the national team? Who do you imagine, or what type of personality do you imagine taking over the role as the U.S. national team coach?
It's tough to say. I think there's people who get paid a lot more than I do that are much more qualified to make those decisions. But I'll honestly support whoever is in charge. And I think whoever ultimately gets that position is going to have to embrace, what we're all about, whether it's a domestic coach, whether it's an international coach. To me, it's just about identifying the top players, getting the right guys in the mix, and like I said, maximizing our talent. I think we're at a point now where fans, players, former players alike, we all just want to see us go for it. We're tired of, kind of playing second fiddle and, changing our quote-unquote style to get results. We're at a moment now where we should be playing good soccer no matter who we're playing against. And if we don't get a result, that's okay if it means it's going to just prepare us that much more for the next time we play against a top opponent. So I'd like to see us continue to progress, to not be so results-oriented, even though obviously that is quite important, especially when you get into qualifying and things like that. But I think it's just important to take that next step of, like I said, playing to our strengths as opposed to playing against other team strengths.
Your big takeaway here at Generation Adidas Cup, a few rounds of qualifying across the U.S. and Canada that you've gotten to see all these young players and these academy teams, and now here so far this week we're about to end the group stage. You can go to MLSsoccer.com for all the streams. We'll have the semifinals on Thursday for you from Toyota Stadium, as well as the finals on Saturday, 4 semifinals, 2 finals, so plenty of soccer to watch, and you can go for all the standings and highlights to MLSsoccer.com. What have your takeaways been? What have you been upset about, impressed by? What's been your reaction?
Yeah, I think the future is bright. We have some talented players that are in professional environments that are developing at a good pace. And I think there's a lot to be excited about, but there's still a ton of work to do. You look at, Flamengo, for example. Every guy to a T, their technique is just completely on point. All these guys are comfortable with the ball, whether, from the center forward to the goalkeeper. There are guys who are able to make the most out of whatever situation they're in a multitude of different ways. And it's not just about playing quick. It's not just about being able to dribble. It's being able to think and see situations from front to back. And I think that's the next step for our kids is, yes, you may have one very good strength, two very good strengths. How much can you expand your game? And that, to me, just takes individual commitment, because our coaches can only stay on a field so long with players to work on different things. A lot of these kids, it's up to them, the time that they put in on their own, watching the game, studying the right movements, the right You know, it's easy to watch a Cristiano Ronaldo highlight when he, you know, scissors a guy and, you know, does something extremely difficult to do and scores a goal. Yes, those are things that any of your kids should dream about, but it's the simple plays as well of, you know, recognizing when to press and when to drop, of, you know, when to switch the field of play or when to suck a team in. All those little things have to be studied. And it's up to these kids to, you know, really test themselves and look at the game in a different scope in order to grow. And I think once we get to that point when man-to-man on a field, we're just as capable as our opponent, then the sky's the limit. After that, then we could talk about much broader goals than what we're currently talking about today.
Last question, a little change of pace for you. Right next to the stadium, Giovanni Savarese, the new Portland Timbers coach, came in and got a 1-1 tie against FC Dallas on the weekend. Tell us a little bit about this guy. He's been around American soccer for a while, getting his first chance as an MLS head coach. You coached under him, a passionate guy, an energetic guy. Take us inside his mind for a second.
Yeah, no, Gio's a special person, and very fortunate that I got to work with him for 4 years and made some incredible memories with the Cosmos, winning championships, coaching world-class players like Raul and Marco Senna. But even more proud of the American domestic guys like a Jimmy Maurer, who was, you know, the starting goalkeeper, and Kyle Zobek, who was the backup for FC Dallas on the weekend as well. I think we did a great job of tapping into talent that had maybe been overlooked or ignored. And that was basically our foundation of, you know, finding international stars that were eager to come to New York and, you know, help the game in America grow. But more importantly, finding domestic guys who maybe don't fit the profile of a, you know, youth national team player, of a professional player, and trying to help them, you know, get on the right path for their career. So I'm really proud of the work we did, and Gio is instrumental. He absolutely led the way with everything the Cosmos organization did the last 4 or 5 years, and I learned a lot from him, and I think he's going to do well in Portland. Obviously, it's a different challenge. It's a new challenge, so I think he's going to have to adapt as a manager as well, with different personalities and different egos to deal with. But wish him all the best, and it was great to see him on the field on Saturday.
Well, we hope the future is bright, as Aleko Eskandarian says. And the future all out on the field at Toyota Soccer Center in Frisco, Texas, for the Generation Adidas Cup. Go to MLSsoccer.com for all your highlights, scores, standings, and streams. For myself, David Goss, I'm Don Aleko. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Alejandro Bedoya from the U.S. National Team, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Good stories of bad lives. Good stories of bad lives. Take your hands off your neck.
Back now at Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Into the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS. That's the Hot Take Hotline. Call us or text us. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Email us if that's your thing, or go to MLSsoccer.com/mailbag to submit a question. We start with Noah from Atlanta. Any reason why you did the old intro last episode? No real reason. Dave forgot to send me the new one, and I forgot to ask him for it, and so throwback was in the cards. We enjoy the old ones. I have a lot of them.
The reason is incompetence.
Yeah, that's the harsh way of putting it.
All right, that's fair.
You know, I have all the old ones, so maybe I'll just release those out on the Twitter.
Yeah, you got to put out like a 2012 era Extra Time Radio intro.
I don't think I have those. So much has been lost to the history of this show, and.
It's a tragedy.
It really is a tragedy. By the way, you mentioned Graham Parker earlier. Mm-hmm. Nick Fershaw, the Paternal Podcast, he just released an episode with Graham Parker. I know I'm on the fatherhood tip these days, but you should definitely go check that out. It's a really good one. Ben in Beaverton via email. One of our local Portland podcasts, Soccer Touchdown, runs a set it and forget it fantasy league where you pick your teams before first kick, and then you can't make a single change for the whole season. No subs, no captain switches, nada. He's curious, what three players would we select if you had to ride them out the rest of the season?
Oof. I mean, we talked about BWP a lot. He would make sense as one, right?
Yeah, I think Joseph Martinez would be on mine. And
I worry about injuries.
I know, I do too, but he still bagged, what, like 20 goals last year?
That's true.
So if that's like a high-risk, high-reward one. I felt like David Villa is a pretty consistent one as well, but he's been a little bit injured to start the season, and I think this NYCFC squad is like, yeah, we need David, but
it's a little more well-rounded.
We can win without him, so there's not as much pressure to put him on the field.
I still go with Javinko as well, because I know he hasn't been quite as productive, and I know he's injury-prone, but like even when he had an injured season last year, he went for, what, 16-7?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I would have previously put Sporting KC, someone from the defense there, just because week over week over week, you're thinking, I'm going to get these shutout points. But no,
Sporting KC is going to get mad at you, Andrew.
I know. These days, I'm not so sure about that. Outside of that this year, I don't know that there are that many quote-unquote sure things. You know, you've got – you could say maybe Pipa, but, you know, I rode him this week and I captained him. That worked out okay for me. But outside of that, I don't know that you have any sure things. So it's all about kind of reading it and seeing who's going to be healthy. Let's see here. TJ in Oakland, California via email. The U.S. missing the World Cup has solidified for me something I've felt for a while. Why bother watching national team soccer at all? Inferior tactics, cohesiveness, and overall product. He gives us CCL versus the Gold Cup as an example here. He says international breaks should just be played by the clubs and almost make it, I don't know, almost make it like a Champions League within international breaks. Then every 4 years we have a true club World Cup.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a cynical take.
Yeah, it's a really cynical take. It's not something I agree with at all. It reminds me of the joke I used to make about Klinsmann saying like his gift to the U.S. is going to be he's going to turn us into a club before country nation of soccer fans, and he almost got us there.
He just emailed in saying this, so I guess.
Yeah, he's got some.
Some people are there.
And, like, hat tip to Bruce, who did his job as well. But I agree. I mean, in general, you do see more simplistic tactics and cohesiveness at the national team level. But, like, it's the national team. It's international soccer. To me, it's always been the thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's emotion tied up there that right now we're not feeling, but we'll come. Don't turn that page, Doyle. I've got a quiz for you right now. Dawson Delk via the MLSsoccer.com mailbag. How old will DeMarcus Beasley be when he finally retires? Right now Beasley's 35. I'm going to say 37.
Okay. He's 35. He turns 36 next month, I believe.
Yeah, which is why I'm saying 37.
Yeah.
Year and next year.
I think that feels right.
But here's the real question I have for you here. Who's the oldest player in Major League Soccer? Because it's not DeMarcus Beasley.
No.
I'm going to give you opportunities to knock out guys in the top 10 here. So throw some names out there. Who do you think are in the top 10 oldest guys in MLS?
Patrice Bernier just retired.
Yeah, Bernier is definitely not on the list, although he probably would have been.
Yeah, I think he would have been number one. Oh, boy. David Villa's got to be on that list. Wow, David Villa's an 81.
David Villa's not on the list.
Oh, wow. You know what? I'd like to phone a friend. No, I have no idea.
Tim Howard is the oldest.
Oh, duh.
He is 39 years old. David Villa is on the list, and I misread it. My bad. Yep, I screwed that one up. Patrice Bernier would have finished second. He would have been tied with Nick Raimondo, who's 38. Ashley Cole, 37.
I don't know why I didn't think a goalkeeper. So I'm an idiot.
Zlatan, 36.
Okay, so that means Kyle Beckerman's there.
Beckerman is 35, so he's on this list. Wando is also 35. There's a bunch of 35-year-old guys, but these are the oldest of the 35s. Dempsey's a little bit younger, so he's like down in the 12, 11 range. Alan Gordon, signed with the Fire, he's 36. Rod Fanny, 36
as well.
Oh,
right. Yeah, just made
his
debut.
Those are the old guys here in MLS right now. Let's see. Spencer Hodap via MLSsoccer.com mailbag. My analytical chemistry professor raised a good question to me today. That's one of the most incredible first lines of an email we've ever gotten, that you're talking in MLS with your analytical chemistry professor. With Zlatan in L.A. on a TAM deal, how on earth does older starters like Dempsey, Villa, and Schweinsteiger, et cetera, stay on DP money?
Well, production. You know, like these guys have all been mostly healthy and productive last year, and so why not bring them back on a DP deal?
Also speaks to the miracle of the TAM deal for Zlatan.
Yeah.
Like that from Chris Klein and Jovan Karowski is really kind of mind-blowing. I think it says a lot more about Zlatan than anything else, that he said, you know what, for this opportunity, for this chance to be in L.A., for this kind of capper for me, I'm willing to do that. Ben Ehrman Trout?
I think I got that right.
Yeah, MLSsoccer.com mailbag.
Like any relation to Mike Ehrman Trout from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Anyway, sorry.
Is there any chance MLS adds a fourth DP slot at some point, especially with the Zlatan rumors? It seems like there are plenty of teams that would use it, even if mine wouldn't just yet. And they've added a bunch with Tam.
Right. Exactly. I think that there, I mean, as recently as 6 months ago, I remember, you know, people interviewing the commissioner and him saying, yeah, there's no movement at all to add a fourth, for the time being anyway, to add a fourth DP slot. So if that happens, I think that'll be after the next CBA.
It's more, right now it's all about roster depth and quality.
Yeah.
And if you give that fourth DP slot, you're basically saying, once again, it's we're only focused on the top end, which I think right now the messaging is right and the spending is right for where MLS is as a league. Zode Compton via the MLSsoccer.com mailbag. European stars have been flocking to MLS for retirement, yet at the same time, youngsters from Latin America are coming in record numbers. Who do you think will perform better, Barco in Latin America or Zlatan in the Euro?
I think that the league, regardless of how well Zlatan performs or how poorly Barco does, though I don't think he's going to be poor at all, the league is going to skew more and more American. That includes North and South America and younger, which is a good thing.
You'll see the investment,
yeah,
like in total sum, really skew hard toward that way because in large part of transfer fees as well.
Yeah.
It's going to cost a lot more to sign these young players than it does to get Zlatan.
Exactly. It costs more, and then there's upside because you could, in theory, sell these guys along and make a big profit. Nobody's going to make a profit off of Zlatan on the backside.
Maybe jersey sales, maybe ticket sales, but certainly not as a long-term investment. John Wilkinson via the MLSsoccer.com mailbag again. Should Siggy have brought Efren Alvarez to Vancouver? I know GA Cup is a good competition, but is it crazy to think if you trust him enough for a senior contract, you should at least put him on the bench in a game you put two keepers on the bench? Efren Alvarez, the second youngest player in MLS. Who's the youngest?
The kid who was just signed by MLS.
Joe Scaly,
right.
Big name at the GA Cup last year as well. Should he have brought Alvarez, or is it the time to let him play GA?
There was no chance that he was ever going to get on the field against Vancouver. So you let him play in GA Cup, and you let him get actual meaningful minutes in a competition that the teams take seriously, and then next week he'll be with the USL team.
Mitch in Mountain View via the MLSsoccer.com mailbag. Again, that's MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. Introduce some math to the MLS All-Star Game. He says, the Audi Player Index selection, it will give the top three players with the highest API a trip to the All-Star Game. So he's got a new order. You got the Fan 11, you have the Audi Player Index, then you have the coach's pick, then you have the commissioner's pick. What do you make of this? I mean, those guys are all going to be in the Fan 11.
Pass.
It's like the Giovinco and David Villas of the world. So, sorry, Mitch. Reservoir Dog in Brandon, Mississippi. If you're putting together an all-name team, what are you looking for in defense? I think first and foremost, you want guys you can depend on who are trusty. You also want some big guys capable of manly challenges. And it never hurts to have a speedy winger who you can fire upfield like a cannon. And because most young players grow up dreaming about playing as strikers, it's great when you can find players who love defending and who are glad to do the dirty work. Austin Trusty, Carter Manley, Reggie Cannon, Justin Glad, our listeners are something else. He's looking forward to hearing our picks. I went through and have some here. You know, you really want a defender who's going to break a sweat, so you have Ben Sweat. You know, ultimately, it's the strikers that get called this more often than not, but brilliant defending is very important, so Frederick Brilliant is what you want. Michael Boxall, I don't know where I was going with that other than, like...
He's good in the box?
Yeah.
All right.
Chad Marshall, he's going to marshal the air. You don't want Harrison Offal on your all-defender team. And if you wanted to have a midfielder that you can trust, Will Trapp is very good at controlling the ball.
I'm going to let you carry this segment a little longer.
Oh, yeah?
Go ahead, Andrew.
You like this?
Yeah.
Look, if you've got some good, like, strange name games to play with us, obviously I'm down. Doyle, we'll save these for Thursday in the future. We'll end here with Ricky Smith via the MLSsoccer.com mailbag. He says, based on the news that Thor is a Whitecaps fan, which superheroes represent certain teams? He says, for Atlanta United, colors aside, Deadpool?
Did we know that Thor is a Whitecaps fan?
He was at the game.
All right. I would have thought Thor was a Minnesota United fan, given the Scandinavian roots
there. Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But I think he was just at the Whitecaps game. I'm more than down for anyone to send us superhero equivalents.
Are you a superhero guy? Comic book
Not
guy?
At all, no.
No. All right.
Have never been, which is why I'm sending it out to the faithful.
Well,
I'm more
go.
Of a bad pun guy.
Right.
Therefore, Reservoir Dog, I spent a good 10 minutes combing through depth charts to find defenders, which I thought would have funny names. Like, that's it for us. Thanks for listening here. If you have anything to say, you know how to get at us. In the meantime, big thanks to Sam Stashkel, Dave Goss, and Aleko Eskandarian, and you, Doyle. And as always, the listeners, we'll see you next time.